Tears of purest exhaustion leaked from her eyes. Let go, she thought. Enough. Let go. At least here, there will be no mob laughing when I go to God. The black, sucking mud of the bog seemed to agree, gurgling. There were wicked eyes, like green lamps, watching her from beneath the water. They belonged to a bolotnik, swamp dweller, breathing out stinking plumes of marsh gas. He could kill her quickly if she let him. He could pull her down into the frigid dark, and she wouldn't have to walk again on her torn feet or breathe against her broken ribs or remember the last 2 days. But Maria, Vasya thought dimly, Maria is in Moscow, and my brother and sister, defenseless against the bear. And so, what could she do? Sasha and the Grand Prince could they? They could not see. They did not understand. My brother has traded his freedom for your life, the bear had said. The carved nightingale was in the sleeve of her shift. Her filthy, groping hand closed tight around the wooden creature, and it seemed a little warmth crept into her chilled limbs. Winter King, why would you do such a terrible thing? He had a reason. Morosko is no fool. Shouldn't she find out why, rather than allow his bargain to go for nothing? But she was so tired. Solovey would have said she was being foolish. He would have made her get on his back and carried her along steadily to wherever they were going, ears flicking cheerfully back and forth. Hot tears spilled from her eyes. On a surge of rage, she yanked herself from the mud, scrambled up the bank. In desperation, she put a hand into the water and spoke in her choked, smoke-damaged voice. Grandfather, she said to the lurking swamp demon, I am looking for a lake with an oak tree growing on the shore. Can you tell me where it is? The bolotnik's eyes had just reached the water. She could make out his scaly limbs churning below the surface. He looked almost surprised. Alive still? He whispered. His voice was the sucking sound of the swamp, his breath the smell of decay. Please, said Vasya. With her fingers, she split one of the clotted cuts on her arm and let her blood fall on the water. The bolotnik's tongue flicked, tasting, and his eyes glowed suddenly bright. Well, you are a courteous maiden, he said, licking his chops. Look then. She followed the turn of his marsh-light eyes. A reddish flicker showed between the black trees, not daylight. Perhaps fire? A rush of fear sent her to her feet, cloak heavy with mud. But it was not fire. It was a living creature. A tall mare, limbed with light, stood hock-deep in the marsh. Sparks like fireflies tumbled from her mane and tail. Molten white against the silver gold of her coat. Head up, she watched Vasya, motionless except for her tail, which lashed her sides with arcs of light. Vasya took an involuntary stumbling step toward the mare, caught between wonder and rage. I remember you, she said to the horse. In Moscow, I set you free. The mare said nothing, only flicked her great golden ears. You could have just flown away, Vasya said. Her voice cracked. Her throat was raw. But instead, you dripped sparks over a city of wood, and they... She could not say the words. The golden mare pawed defiantly, splashing, and spoke. I would have killed them all if I could, she returned. Killed all the men in the world. They dare trick me, bind me. Scars of saddle and spur marked the mare's golden perfection, and her face was striped with white where the golden bridle had been. I would have killed the whole city. Vasya said nothing. Grief was a frozen ball in her mouth. She could only stare with mute hatred at the mare. The mare spun and galloped away. Follow her, fool, hissed the swamp demon. Or if you prefer, stay here, and I will eat you. Vasya hated the mare, but she did not want to die. She began to make her way through the trees, stumbling on bloody feet. On and on she went, following the dot of golden light, until she was quite sure that she could not walk a step more. But then she did not have to. The trees ended. She found herself in a sloping meadow leading down to a vast, frozen lake. It was earliest spring. Stars cast a faint silver sheen on the long grass of an open field. All around she could discern the shapes of great trees, black against the silver sky. Snow lay on this field only in hollows and patches. Faintly she could hear the sound of water under the lake's ice. There were more horses grazing in the meadow. 3, 6, a dozen. The night faded them all to gray, except for the golden mare. Standing among them, she glittered like a fallen star, head up in challenge. Vasya halted, full of agonized wonder. Part of her was half convinced that her own horse must be here, among his kin, that in a moment he would gallop toward her, flinging snow from under his feet, and she wouldn't be alone anymore. "Solovey," she whispered. "Solovey." A dark head rose, then a paler one. All of a sudden, the horses were wheeling, fleeing. On four legs, they fled from the sound of her voice, straight down toward the lake. But just before their hooves struck water, their hooves became wings. As birds, they took to the air and soared over the starlit water. Vasya watched them go, tears of pure wonder in her eyes. They winged across the lake, no two alike. Owl and eagle and duck and smaller birds, purely, miraculously, strange. Last of all to leave the earth was the golden mare. Her wings swept wide, trailing smoke, and her plumed tail was every color of flame, gold and blue violet and white. She flew after her kin, calling. In moments, they were all swallowed by the darkness. Vasya stared at the place the horses had been. It was as though she dreamed them. Her vision swam with weariness. Her feet and her face were numb, and she had gone beyond shivering, cocooned icily in shock. "Solovey," she wondered dimly, "why didn't you fly away too?" Just at the edge of the lake stood a single vast oak tree. Its branches stood out like blackened bones against the moon-white ice. To her right, nestled among the trees, was a squat, dark shape. It was a house, or rather, a ruin. The house's roof, sloped steeply to keep off the snow, had fallen in. No firelight showed behind window or door. There was only silence, the faint creaking of trees, the crack of thinning lake ice. And yet this place, this clearing by the water, did not feel empty. It felt watchful. The house had been built on a sturdy platform between two trees. The trees gave it a look of standing alertly on strong legs, the windows like black eyes staring down. For an instant, the house didn't seem dead at all. It seemed to be watching her. Then the illusion of menace faded. It was only a ruin. The steps were rotten, crumbling. There would be dead leaves within, and mice, and unrelieved dark. But there might be a working stove, even a handful of grain from the house's last occupant. At the very least, she could get out of the wind. Only half aware of what she was doing, Vasya crossed the meadow, stumbling on rocks, skidding on snow. Gritting her teeth, she crawled up the steps. The only sounds were the groaning of branches and her own hoarse breathing. At the top of the stairs stood two posts, carved with figures starlit and fantastic. Bears, suns, moons, small strange faces that might have been Cherti. Over the door was a lintel carved in the shape of two rearing horses. The door hung askew on its hinges in a litter of slick, rotten leaves. Vasya paused to listen. Silence. Of course, silence. Perhaps there were beasts denning here, but she was beyond caring. The half-fallen door gave with a squeal from rusted hinges. Vasya stumbled inside. She found dust, old leaves, the smell of decay and chill, weary damp. It was no warmer than outside, though at least there was not the cold wind off the lake. Most of the house was taken up by a crumbling brick oven, its mouth a maw in the blackness. Across the room, where the icon corner should be, there were no icons, only a big dark thing shoved against the wall. Vasya groped her way cautiously to that corner and found a wooden chest, bronze-bound and securely locked. She turned shivering back toward the oven. Mostly, she just wanted to sink down on the floor in the dark and let unconsciousness take her, never mind the cold. Gritting her teeth, she heaved herself atop the oven bench and gingerly touched the rough brick, where a person might have breathed her last. But there was nothing. No blanket. Certainly no bones. What tragedy had left this strange ruin deserted? The night outside cradled the house with a silent menace. Her groping fingers found a few dusty sticks beside the oven. Enough for a fire, though she didn't want fire. Her memory was full of flames, the choking smell of smoke. The heat would hurt her blistered face. But it was certainly cold enough for a wounded girl wearing only a cloak and shift to freeze to death. She meant to live. So, moved only by the cold embers of will, Vasya set about making a fire. Her lips and fingertips were quite numb. She bruised her shins on things she could not see, scrabbling for the sticks and pine needles for kindling. After a half-blind effort that left her trembling, she had made a heap of sticks that she could barely see in the mouth of the oven. She felt over the entire house for flint and steel and charred cloth, but there were none. She could make a fire with a flat piece of wood and patience and strength in the forearms, but both her strength and patience were at an end. Well, do it or freeze. She took the stick between her hands. When she was a child in the autumn woods, it had been a game. The stick, the board, the swift, strong movement. Deftly handled, the smoke would turn into fire, and Vasya still remembered her brother Alyosha's grin of delight the first time she did it unaided. But this time, though she labored and sweated, not a single curl of smoke rose from the board between her knees. No ember glowed in the groove. At last, Vasya let the stick fall, shivering, defeated, useless. She was going to die after all, with only the dust of someone else's life for company. She did not know how long she sat in the sour-smelling silence, not crying, not feeling anything, just hovering on the edge of unconsciousness. She never knew what spurred her to raise her head once more, teeth sunk in her lower lip. She must have fire. She must. In her head, in her heart, was the terrible presence of fire, memory as strong as anything in her life, as though her soul were full of flames. Ridiculous that fire burns so bright in hated memory, but there was no scrap of light here where it could do some good. Why should it be only in her mind? She shut her eyes, and for an instant, memory was so strong that she forgot it wasn't. Vasya smelled smoke first, and her eyes opened, just as her sticks burst into flame. Shocked, almost frightened of her success, Vasya hurried to add wood. The room filled with light, the shadows retreated. The hut looked even worse by firelight, ankle deep in leaves, crumbling, mildewed, thick with dust. But there was a little woodpile she hadn't seen, a few dry logs, and it was warmer now. The fire drove back the night and the chill. she was going to live. Vasya stretched out trembling hands to the fire. A hand shot out of the oven and grasped her wrist. Chapter 10, The Devil in the Oven. Vasya drew a single, startled breath, but she did not pull away. The hand was as small as a child's, long-fingered, traced in red and gold from the firelight. It did not let her go. Instead, Vasya found herself pulling a tiny person into the room. She was a woman no taller than Vasya's knee, with eyes the color of earth. She was licking embers hungrily off the end of a stick, but she paused to look up at Vasilisa and say, "Well, I have overslept and no mistake. Who are you?" Then the Chert caught sight of the decay all around them, and her voice rose in sudden alarm. "Where is my mistress? What are you doing here?" Vasya sank down onto the crumbling oven bench in exhausted surprise. Domovia did not live in ruins. They did not live on in houses at all when their families had gone. "There is no one here," Vasya said, "only me. This place, it is dead. What are you doing here?" The domovoy, no, a female, a domovaya, stared. "I do not understand. The house cannot be dead. I am the house, and I am alive. You must be lying. What have you done to them? What have you done to this place? Stand and answer me!" Her voice was shrill with fright. "I cannot stand," Vasya whispered. That was true. The fire had taken the last of her strength. "I am only a traveler. I thought only to make a fire and stay here for the night." "But you," the domovoy, domovaya, peered again about the house, took in the extent of the rot. Her eyes widened in horror. "Overslept indeed. Just look at this filth. I cannot just let vagabonds stay without my mistress's leave. You will have to go. I must set things to rights against her return." "I do not think your mistress is coming back," said Vasya. "This house is abandoned. I do not know how you managed to survive in that cold oven." Her voice broke. "Please, please let me stay. I cannot bear any more." A small silence. Vasya could feel the domovaya's narrow regard. "Very well, then," she said. "You will stay here tonight. Poor child. My mistress would want it." "Thank you," Vasya whispered. The domovaya, still muttering to herself, went at once to the chest, shoved against the wall. She had a key hanging at her throat. She unlocked the iron hasp of the chest. It gave with a rusty click. Before Vasya's astonished eyes, the domovaya produced linen and a clay bowl, laid them on the hearth. Then she took a bucket and went outside for snow, which she set at once to heating, and a branch of young pine needles, which she scattered in the water. Vasya watched the steam rise through the hole in the roof, only half aware of the domovaya's deft movements as she peeled away the shift that had so nearly been Vasya's shroud, briskly sponged off the worst of the fear sweat, the soot, and the blood, washed away the scum about Vasya's injured eye. The latter hurt, but when the crust was wiped away, Vasya could see through a slit. She was not blinded. She was too tired to care even for that. From the chest in the corner, the domovaya produced a wool shirt. Vasya barely felt the domovaya put it on her, found herself lying atop the oven under rabbit skin blankets with no idea how she'd gotten there. The brick was warm. The last thing she heard before oblivion claimed her was the small voice of the domovaya saying, "A little rest will put you aright, but you are going to have a scar on your face." Vasilisa Petrovna never knew how long she slept. She had dim memories of nightmares, of screaming for Soloveï to run. She dreamed the midnight demon's voice. "It must be done," Polnochnitsa said. "Send her forth for all our sakes," and the domovaya's voice raised in distress. But before Vasya could speak, darkness pulled her under once more. Uncounted hours later, she opened her eyes to dawn. the light almost shocking after the long dark. It was as though she'd only dreamed the tangled roads of midnight. Perhaps she had. Lying in the blurred gray light of early morning, she could have been anywhere, atop any oven. Dunya, she called, her childhood strong in her mind. It had always been her nurse who comforted her after nightmares. Memory crashed in. She made an inarticulate sound of distress. A small head appeared at once beside her pallet, but Vasya barely saw the domovaya. Memory had her by the throat. She was shivering. The domovaya watched, frowning. "Forgive me," Vasya managed at length. She pushed her ragged hair back from her face. Her teeth chattered. The oven was warm, but there was still a hole in the roof, and Memory was colder than the air.
I am called Vasilisa Petrovna. Thank you for your hospitality."
The domovaya looked almost sad.
"It is not hospitality," she said.
"I was asleep in the fire. You awoke me. You are my mistress now."
"But this is not my house."
The domovaya made no reply. Vasya sat up, wincing. The domovaya had done her best while Vasya slept. The dust and dead mice, the rotten leaves, were gone.
"It is much more like home now," Vasya said cautiously. Now that it was daylight, she saw that most of the wood on the roof tree and table was carved like the lintel outside, worn to smoothness from use and care. The house had a dignity to match its hearth spirit, an old, subtle beauty that time could not quite conceal. The domovaya looked pleased.
"You mustn't lie abed. The water is hot. Your wounds must be cleaned again and bound afresh."
She disappeared. Vasya heard her adding wood to the fire. Getting down to the floor left Vasya panting, as though she were new recovered from fever. To add insult to injury, she was also hungry.
"Is there," croaked Vasya, swallowed, tried again, "is there anything to eat?"
Lips pursed. The domovaya shook her head. Why would there be? It was too much to suppose that the house's long-banished mistress would have conveniently left loaf and cheese.
"Did you burn my shift?" Vasya asked.
"I did," said the domovaya, shuddering. "It stank of fear."
"Well, it might." Then Vasya stiffened. "There was a token, a carving I was carrying in it. Did you..."
"No," said the domovaya. "It is here."
Vasya seized the little carved nightingale as if it were a talisman. Perhaps it was. It was dirty but undamaged. She wiped it clean, thrust it again into her sleeve. A bowl of snow melt steamed on the hearth. The domovaya said briskly,
"Take off that shirt. I am going to wash your wounds again."
Vasya did not want to think about her wounds. She did not want to have flesh at all. Just below the surface of her mind lurked the most howling grief, the memory of death, of violation. She did not want to see those memories scribed on her skin. The domovaya was not sympathetic.
"Where is your courage? You do not want to die of a poisoned wound."
That, at least, was true. A slow and horrible death. Before she could lose her nerve, Vasya, wordless, peeled the shirt over her head, stood up shivering in the light from the crumbling roof, and looked down at her body. Bruises of every color, red and black, purple and blue, cuts latticed her torso. She was glad she could not see her own face. Two teeth were loose, her lips were split and sore. One eye was still half swollen shut. When she raised her hand to her face, she was met with a clotted gash on her cheek. The domovaya had produced dusty-smelling herbs, honey for bandaging, lengths of clean linen from the chest in the corner. Vasya, staring, said,
"Who leaves such things in a locked box in a ruin?"
"I hardly know," said the domovaya shortly. "They were here, that's all."
"Surely you remember something."
"I don't," The Domovaya looked suddenly angry. Why are you asking? Isn't it enough that it was here, that it saved your life? Sit down. No, there.
Vasya sat. I am sorry, she said. I was only curious.
The more one knows, the sooner one grows old, snapped the Domovaya. Hold still.
Vasya tried, but it hurt. A few cuts had closed in their own blood. The Domovaya left them alone. But many had been pulled open under the stresses of the night, and she had not got all of the soot and splinters working by firelight. But all were bound up and salved at last.
Thank you, Vasya said, hearing her voice shake. Hurriedly, she put on her shirt to shut away the sight of herself, and then rubbed a bit of her charred hair between two fingers, foul, tangled, fire-smelling. It would never be clean again.
Will you cut my hair off, as short as you can, said Vasya. I have had enough of Vasilisa Petrovna.
The Domovaya had only a knife to cut with, but she took it up without a word. Hanks of black hair tumbled down, soundless as snow, to be swept out and flung away for the nesting birds. When it was done, the air seemed to whistle strangely past Vasya's ears and down her neck. Not long ago, Vasya would have wept to lose her black hair. Now she was glad to have it gone. Her long, glossy plait belonged to another girl in another life. The Domovaya, a little subdued, returned to the iron-bound chest. This time, boys' clothes appeared. Loose trousers and sash, kaftan, even boots, good leather sapogi. They were badly creased, yellowed with time, but unworn. Vasya frowned. Bits of herbs were one thing, but this? Sturdy garments, sewn with a competent hand, out of close-woven linen and thick wool, they even fit. Did? Vasya could scarce credit it. She peered down at herself. She was warm, clean, rested, alive, clothed. Did someone know I was coming? The question was ridiculous. The clothes were older than she was. And yet... The Domovaya shrugged. Who was your mistress? Vasya asked. Who had this house before? The Domovaya only looked at her blankly. Are you sure it's not you? I almost remember you.
I've never been here before, said Vasya. Can't you remember?
I remember existing, returned the Domovaya, a little affronted. I remember these walls, my key. I remember names and shadows in the fire, nothing more.
She looked distressed. Vasya, in courtesy, let the subject drop. With gritted teeth, she concentrated on getting woolen stockings and sapogi onto her torn and burned feet. Gingerly, she put her feet to the floor, then stood and winced. Now if only I could float along like the devil that cannot touch the earth, she said, trying a few limping steps. The Domovaya thrust an old reed basket into Vasya's hands. If you want supper, you will have to find it, she said. There was a strange note in her voice. She pointed at the woods. Vasya could hardly bear the thought of going gathering in her current state, but she knew it would only be worse the next day, as her bruises stiffened. Very well, she said. The Domovaya looked suddenly anxious. Beware the forest, she added, following Vasya to the door. It does not take kindly to strangers. Safer to come back by nightfall.
What happens at nightfall? Asked Vasya.
The season will turn, said the Domovaya, twisting her hands together.
What does that mean?
You cannot get back if the season turns. Or you can, but by then it will be someplace different.
How different?
Different, cried the Domovaya and stamped her foot. Now go!
Very well, said Vasya, placating. I will be back by nightfall.
Chapter 11 Of Mushrooms. Food in the forest is at its scarcest at the end of winter, and Vasya could barely touch anything with her blistered hands. But she must try or starve. And so she let herself be urged out the door. The cool morning, pale as pearl, threw tendrils of mist over the blue-gray ice. Ancient trees ringed the frozen water. Their dark limbs seemed to hold up the sky. Frost silvered the earth, and all around was the whisper of water, breaking loose winter's bonds. A thrush called from within the wood. There was no sign of the horses. Vasya might have stood on the rotten steps until she froze, forgetting sorrow in the pure and untouched beauty. But her stomach reminded her she must live. And to live, she must eat. Determinedly, she went into the forest. In another life, Vasya had wandered the woods of Lesnaya Zemlya in all its seasons. In spring, she would walk in the wild places, sun in her hair, and sometimes call greetings to her friend the Rusalka, coming awake from her long sleep. But Vasya was not soft-footed now. She limped. Every step seemed to uncover a new pain. Her father would have mourned, for his light-footed, light-hearted child was gone and would not return. There were no people and, out of sight of the house, no sign that there ever had been. Walking in solitary silence loosened the chokehold of rage and terror and grief on Vasya's soul. She began to consider the shape of the land and wonder where food might be had. A breath of wind, incongruously warm, riffled her hair. She was well out of sight of the house now. A patch of dandelion was flowering in a sunlit gap between the trees. Startled, Vasya bent and plucked the leaves. So early? She ate one of the flowers as she walked, chewing gingerly with her sore jaw. Another patch of dandelions. Wild onion. The sun was over the treetops now. There, young dock, leaves curling. And wild strawberries? Vasya halted. It is too early, she murmured. It was. And there? Mushrooms? Belie? The tops of their pale heads just showed above a heap of dead leaves. Her mouth watered. She went to cut them, then looked again. One had spots that seemed to glisten strangely in the sun. Not spots. Eyes. The largest of the mushrooms peered up at her, eyes a livid scarlet. Not a mushroom at all, but a chert, scarcely the length of her forearm. A mushroom spirit, glaring, shook himself free of the leaf litter.
Who are you? His voice was shrill. Why have you come into my woods?
His woods?
Trespasser, he squeaked,
and Vasya realized he was frightened.
I didn't know they were your woods.
She showed the chert empty hands, knelt stiffly so he could see her better. The cold moss soaked through the knees of her leggings.
I mean no harm. I am only looking for food.
The mushroom spirit blinked, said,
Not exactly my woods,
and then added hastily,
But it doesn't matter. You can't be here.
Not even if I make an offering? Asked Vasya. She put a perfect dandelion down before the creature. The chert touched the flower with a grayish finger. His outline solidified. Now he resembled a small person more than a mushroom. He looked down at himself and back at her in puzzlement. Then he flung away the flower.
I don't believe you, he cried. Do you think to make me do your bidding? You will not. I don't care how many offerings you give me. The bear is free. He says we are striking a blow for ourselves now. If we join him, we will make men believe in us again. We will be worshipped again and have no need to make bargains with witches.
Vasya, rather than answer, got hurriedly to her feet. How exactly are you striking a blow for yourselves? Wary, she looked about her, but nothing stirred. There were only birds flitting and strong, steady sunlight. A pause.
We will do great and terrible deeds, said the mushroom spirit.
Vasya tried not to sound impatient. What does that mean? The mushroom spirit threw his head back proudly, but he didn't actually answer. Perhaps he didn't know.
Great and terrible deeds?
Vasya kept an eye on the silent forest.
In the midst of loss and injury and terror, she had not stopped to consider the implications of her last night in Moscow. What had Morozko set in motion by freeing the bear? What did it mean for herself, for her family, and for Rus? Why had he done it? Some part of her whispered, "He loves you and so gave his freedom." But that could not be the only reason. She was not so vain as to think the Winter King would risk all he had long defended for a mortal maiden. More important than why, what was she going to do about it? "I must find the Winter King," she thought. "The bear must be bound once more." But she didn't know how to do either of those things. She was wounded still and hungry. "What makes you think I want you to do my bidding?" Vasya inquired of the mushroom spirit. He had subsided under a log while she thought. She could just see the gleam of his eyes peeping out. "Who told you that?" The mushroom spirit poked his head out, scowled. "No one. I am no fool. What else would a witch want? Why else would you have taken the road through midnight?" "Because I fled for my life," said Vasya. "I only came into the forest because I am hungry." To illustrate, she took a handful of spruce tips from her basket and began determinedly chewing. The mushroom spirit, still suspicious, said, "I can show you where better food is growing, if, as you say, you are hungry." He was watching her closely. "I am," said Vasya at once, getting to her feet. "I would be glad of a guide."
"Well," said the chert, "follow me then."
He darted off at once into the undergrowth. Vasya, after a moment's thought, followed, but she kept the lake always in sight. She did not trust the forest's hostile silence, and she did not trust the little mushroom spirit. Vasya's mistrust soon mingled with amazement, for she found herself in a land of wonders. The spruce tips were green and tender. Dandelions nodded in the breeze off the lake. She ate and gathered and ate, and then she realized suddenly that there was a sprawl of blueberries at her feet, more strawberries hidden beneath the damp grass. Not spring anymore, but summer. "What is this place?" Vasya asked the mushroom spirit. In her mind, she had begun calling him Djedgrib, Grandfather Mushroom. He gave her an odd look.
"The land between noon and midnight, between winter and spring. The lake lies at the center. All lands touch here at the water, and you can step from one to the other."
A country of magic, such as she had once dreamed of. After an instant of odd silence, Vasya asked, "If I go far enough, will I reach the country of winter?"
"Yes," said the chert, though he looked dubious. "It is far to walk."
"Is the Winter King there?" Djedgrib gave her another odd look.
"How would I know? I cannot grow in the snow."
Thinking, frowning, Vasya returned her attention to filling her basket and her belly. She found cresses and cowslips, blueberries and gooseberries and strawberries. Deeper she went into the summertime forest. How happy Solovey would have been, she thought, while her feet bruised the tender grass. Perhaps together we could have gone to find his kin. Sorrow drained away her pleasure in the sun on her back, in the sun-ripened strawberry between her lips, but she kept gathering. The warm green world quieted her wounded spirit. Djedgrib was sometimes visible, sometimes not. He liked to hide under logs, but always she could sense him watching, curious, untrusting. When the sun was high overhead, she remembered caution and her promise to the Domovaya. She had not yet regained her strength, and that she would need, whatever came next. "I have all I need," she said. "I must get back." Djedgrib popped out from behind a stump.
"You haven't come to the best part," he protested,
pointing to a distant flash of trees clad in scarlet and gold, as though autumn, like summer, was a place you could walk into. A little farther.
Vasya was intensely curious. She also thought hungrily of chestnuts and pine nuts, but caution won.
I have learned the cost of being reckless, she told Yadvib. I have enough for one day.
He looked disgruntled, but said nothing else. Reluctantly, Vasya turned back the way she had come. It was hot in this summer country. She was dressed for early spring, in wool shirt and stockings. Her laden basket swung from her arm. Her feet throbbed now. Her ribs ached. To her left, the forest whispered and watched. To her right lay the lake, summer blue. Between the trees, she glimpsed a little sandy cove. Thirsty, Vasya strayed nearer the water, knelt, drank. The water was clear as air, so cold it made her teeth ache. Her bandages itched. The sponge bath that morning had done nothing to ease her bone-deep sense of filth. Abruptly, Vasya stood and began to strip. The Domovaya would be cross with her for undoing all the careful wrapping, but Vasya couldn't bring herself to care. Her hands were trembling with eagerness, as though the clean water could scour both the dirt from her skin and memory from her mind.
What are you doing? Asked Yadvib.
He was staying well away from the sand and the rocks, hiding in the shade.
I am going to swim, said Vasya.
Yadvib opened his mouth, closed it again. Vasya paused. Is there a reason why I shouldn't? The mushroom spirit shook his head, slowly, but he gave the water a nervous look. Perhaps he didn't like water.
Well, said Vasya.
She hesitated, but Mother of God, she wanted to peel off her own skin and become someone else. A plunge in the lake might at least quiet her mind.
I won't go far. Perhaps you will look after my basket?
She waded in. At first, she walked on rocks, wincing. Then the bottom became slick mud. She dove and came up yelling. The freezing lake closed her lungs and set her senses ablaze. She put her back to the shore and swam. The water delighted her beneath the heat of the unaccustomed sun, but it was very cold. At last she halted, ready to turn back, scrub herself in the shallows, lie drying in the sun. But when she turned, all she saw was water. Vasya spun in a circle. Nothing. It was as though the whole world had sunk suddenly into the lake. For a few moments, she treaded water, shocked, beginning to be afraid. Perhaps she was not alone.
I mean no harm, said Vasya aloud, trying to ignore her chattering teeth.
Nothing happened. Vasya paddled in a circle again, still nothing. Panic in this cold water, and she was as good as dead. She must simply take her best guess and pray. With a splash like a shout, a creature shot out of the water in front of her. Two slitted nostrils lay between its bulbous eyes. Its teeth were the color of rock, hooked over a narrow jaw. When it exhaled, its breath steamed, and oily liquid ran down its face.
I am going to drown you, it whispered, and lunged.
Vasya made no answer. Instead, her cupped hand came down on the water like a thunderclap. The chert jerked back, and Vasya snapped.
An immortal sorcerer could not kill me, and neither could a priest with all Moscow at his beck. What makes you think you can?
You came into my lake, returned the chert, baring black teeth.
To swim, not to die. That is for me to decide.
Vasya tried to ignore the goad of her aching ribs and to speak calmly.
For trespassing, I am guilty before you, but I do not owe you my life.
The chert breathed scalding steam onto Vasya's face.
I am the Bagyanik, he growled, and I tell you your life is forfeit.
Try and take it then, snapped Vasya, but I am not afraid of you. The chert lowered his head, churning the blue water to froth.
Are you not?
What did you mean that the immortal sorcerer could not kill you?
Vasya's legs were on the edge of cramping.
I killed Kaschei Besmiertny in Moscow on the last night of Maslenitsa.
Liar!
Snapped the Bagyanik and lunged again, nearly swamping her. Vasya didn't flinch. Much of her concentration was taken with staying above water.
Liar I have been, she said, and I have paid for it. But about this I am telling the truth. I killed him.
The Bagyanik shut his mouth abruptly. Vasya turned away, looking for the shore.
I know you now, murmured the Bagyanik. You have the look of your family. You took the road through midnight.
Vasya had no time for the Bagyanik's revelations.
I did, she managed, but my family is far away. As I said, I mean no harm. Where is the shore?
Far away? Near at hand, too. You understand neither yourself nor the nature of this place.
She was beginning to sink lower in the water.
Grandfather, the shore.
The Bagyanik's black teeth shone with water. He slid nearer, moving like a water snake.
Come, it will be quick. Drown, and I will live 1,000 years on the memory of your blood.
No! What use are you otherwise? Demanded the Bagyanik, gliding nearer and nearer still.
Drown!
Vasya was using the last of her strength just to keep her numb limbs turning.
What use am I? None. I have made more mistakes than I can count, and the world has no place for me. And yet, as I said before, I am still not going to die to please you.
The Bagyanik snapped his teeth right in her face, and Vasya, heedless of her wounds, caught him round the neck. He thrashed and almost threw her loose, but he didn't. In her hands was the strength that had broken the bars of her cage in Moscow.
You will not threaten me, Vasya added into the Chert's ear, and sucked in a breath just as they plunged.
When they surfaced, the girl still clung. Gasping, she said,
I may die tomorrow, or live to sour old age, but you are only a wraith in a lake, and you will not command me.
The Bagyanik stilled, and Vasya let go, coughing out water, feeling the strain in muscles along her broken side. Her nose and mouth were full of water. A few of her reopened cuts streamed blood. The Bagyanik nosed at her bleeding skin. She didn't move. With surprising mildness, the Bagyanik said,
Perhaps you are not useless after all. I have not felt such strength since...
He broke off.
I will bring you to shore.
He looked suddenly eager. Vasya found herself clinging to a sinuous body, scorching hot. She shivered as life came back into her limbs. Warily, she said,
What did you mean, that I have the look of my family?
Undulating through the water, the Bagyanik said,
Don't you know?
There was a strange undercurrent of eagerness in his voice.
Once the old woman and her twins lived in the house by the oak tree and tended the horses that graze on the lake shore.
What old woman? I have been to the house by the oak tree, and it is a ruin.
Because the sorcerer came, said the Bagyanik, a man, young and fair. He said he wished to tame a horse, but it was Tamara, her mother's heir, whom he won over. They swam together in the lake at midsummer. He whispered his promises in the autumn twilight. In the end, for his sake, Tamara put a golden bridle on the golden mare, the Zhar Ptitsa.
Now Vasya was listening closely. This was her own history, laid out casually by a lake spirit in a country far away. Her grandmother's name had been Tamara. Her grandmother had come from a distant land, riding a marvelous horse.
The sorcerer took the golden mare and left the lands by the lake, continued the Bagyanik. Tamara rode after him, weeping, swearing to recover the mare, swearing that she loved him in the same breath. But she never came back, and neither did the sorcerer. He made himself master of a great swath of the lands of men. No one ever knew what happened to Tamara. The old woman, in grief, shut and guarded every road to this place, except the road through midnight.
There were 100 questions darting through her head. Her tongue snatched up the first.
What happened to the other horses? Vasya asked. I saw a few of them last night, and they were wild.
The water spirit swam in silence a while. She did not think he would answer. Then the Bagyanik said, his voice deep and savage,
The ones you saw are all that remain now. The sorcerer slew all that strayed away from the lake. Occasionally he caught a foal, but they never lasted long. They died or they escaped.
Mother of God, Vasya whispered, how? Why?
They are the most marvelous things in all the world, the horses of this land. The sorcerer couldn't ride them. He couldn't tame them or use them. So he killed them.
Almost too low to hear, the Bagyanik added,
The ones that were left, the old woman kept them here, safe. But she is gone now, and there are fewer every year. The world has lost its wonder.
Vasya didn't speak. Her memory was a welter of flame, and Solovey's lifeblood.
Where did they come from? She whispered. The horses.
Who knows? The earth brought them forth. The very natures are magic. Of course, men and Cherti want to tame them. Some of the horses take riders willingly, added the Bagyanik.
The swan, the dove, the owl, and the raven, and the nightingale.
I know what happened to the nightingale.
Vasya could barely say it. He was my friend, and he is dead.
The horses do not choose unwisely, said the Bagyanik.
Vasya said nothing at all. After a long silence, lifting her head, she asked,
Can you tell me where the bear has imprisoned the Winter King?
Beyond recall, long ago and far away and deep in the dark.
That does not change, said the water spirit.
Do you think the bear would risk his twin winning free now?
No, said Vasya. No, I suppose he wouldn't.
Suddenly she felt unutterably tired. The world was huge and strange and maddening. Nothing seemed real. She neither knew what to do nor how to do it. She laid her head on the chair's warm back and did not speak again. She didn't notice the light change until she heard the murmur of water on Pebbled Cove. In the time they'd been swimming, the sun had tilted west, cold and yellow-green. She was in summer twilight on the cusp of night. The golden day was gone, as though the lake itself had swallowed it. Vasya rolled with a splash into the shallows and stumbled onto the shore. The shadows of the trees stretched long and gray toward the water. Her clothes were a cold heap in the shade. The Bagyanik was only a smudge of darkness, half submerged in the lake. Vasya rounded on him in sudden fear.
What happened to the day?
She saw the Bagyanik's eyes beneath the water, shining rows of teeth.
Did you bring me into twilight on purpose? Why?
Because you killed the sorcerer. Because you did not let me kill you. Because word has gone out among the Cherti, and we are all curious.
The Bagyanik's answer floated, disembodied, out of the shadows.
I advise you to make a fire. We will be watching.
Why?
Vasya demanded again, but the Bagyanik had already sunk beneath the water and disappeared.
The girl stood still, furious, trying to ignore her fear.
The day was rushing down around her as though the forest itself was determined to catch her at nightfall. Used to her own unthinking endurance, she now had to contend with the weakness of her battered flesh. She was half a day's walking from the house by the oak tree.
"The season will turn," the Domovaya had said. What did that mean? Could she risk it? Should she?
She looked up at the gathering dark and knew she couldn't make it back before nightfall.
Stay then, she decided, and she would take the Bagyanik's poisonous advice and use the last of the light to gather firewood. Whatever dangers haunted this place, better to meet them with a good fire and a full belly.
She set about gathering firewood, angry at her own credulity. The forest of Lesnaya Zemlya had been kind to her, and that trust was still there, though this place had no cause for kindness. A brilliant sunset reddened the water. The wind whistled through the pines. The lake was perfectly still. Golden was sunset. Dietgrib reappeared as she was chopping up a deadfall.
"Don't you know you mustn't pass the night beside the lake in a new season?" he asked. "Or you will never get the old season back. If you go back to the house by the oak tree tomorrow, it will be summer and no spring at all for you."
"The Bagyanik kept me in the lake," Vasya said grimly.
The girl was recalling white, sparkling days in Morosko's house in the fir grove.
"You will return on the same night you left," he had told her.
She had, even though she spent days, weeks in his house. She had. And now, would the moon wax and wane in the wider world while she passed a single night in this summer country? If you could spend a day in the lake in minutes, then what else was possible? The thought frightened her, as even the Bagyanik's threats had not. The patterns of day and dark, summer and winter, were as much a part of her as her own breath. Was there no pattern here at all?
"I didn't think you'd come out of the lake at all," the Chert confided. "I knew the Great Ones were planning something for you. Besides, the Bagyanik hates people."
Vasya had an armful of firewood. She flung it down in fury.
"You might have told me."
"Why?" asked Dietgrib.
"I can't interfere with the Great One's plans. Besides, you let one of the horses die, didn't you? Maybe it would have been justice if the Bagyanik had killed you, for he loves them."
"Justice?" she demanded. All the rage and guilt and trapped helplessness of the last few days seemed to spill out.
"Have I not had enough justice these last days? I only came here for food. I have done nothing to you, nothing to your forest. And still, you, all of you."
Words failed her. In bitter anger, she seized a stick and flung it down on the head of the little mushroom. She wasn't prepared for his reaction. The cloudy flesh of his head and shoulder sheared away. The Chert crumpled with a shriek of pain, and Vasya was left standing, appalled, while Dietgrib went bloodlessly from white to gray to brown, like a mushroom kicked over by a careless child.
"No," said Vasya in horror. "No, I didn't mean it."
Without thinking, she knelt, put her hand on his head.
"I am sorry," she said. "I didn't mean to hurt you. I am sorry."
He stopped turning gray. She realized she was crying. She hadn't realized how deep the last day's violence had gone inside her. Hadn't realized that it was still inside her, coiled up, ready to lash out in terror and rage.
"Forgive me," she said.
The Chert blinked his red eyes. He breathed. He was not dying. He looked more real than he had a moment ago. His broken body had knitted itself.
"Why did you do that?" asked the mushroom.
"I didn't mean to hurt you," said Vasya.
She pressed the heels of her hands to her eyes.
"I never meant to hurt anyone."
She was shaking in every limb.
"But you're right. I did. I did."
"You
The mushroom was examining his cloudy gray arm with puzzlement. You gave me your tears.
Vasya shook her head, struggling to speak.
For my horse, she managed. For my sister, even for Morozko.
She scrubbed at her eyes, tried to smile.